Stipe. From Greenwich, Friday morning, Friday ahead of Thanksgiving week. Hard to start the morning for those of us that are, you know, been around for, I guess, for any period of time. Tough to start with my usual mama. The word came yesterday as we were expecting. You heard Dave Greinig with me earlier in the week when he had been up to Saratoga and spent a good portion of the afternoon that day with the ailing Dave Litvin. That Dave had passed yesterday afternoon after a heartbreaking and incredibly challenging, you know, cancer bout that that he fought valiantly. And there, you know, was a period after the initial diagnosis that he was able to hold it at bay for at least a period of time, and ultimately, and literally here with what, a month after his son Sam, who worked for us at the barbecue, after finally getting married, after protracted delays that a bunch of things conspired, but Dave got to be there, and for that, I'm sure Robin, grateful, and the sisters, his sisters, don't know the sisters as well as Sam or Robin, but Dave Litvin. And Will, you know, it is weekend preview, so we got plenty of preview work to do. It's also opening day at Fairgrounds. But we will get some tributes in. And in this hour, Karen Johnson, KJ, who worked with him in New York in a bunch of capacities, with the form when you'd see Karen's byline, and then in also as a publicist, and I'm sure a lot of people don't even realize that Dave started on the turf publicist side before starting his career as a turf writer, because Dave wrote plenty of, you know, straightforward kinds of turf coverage. And was very, very good. You know, much like, it's funny, much like Brad Free, who's going to join us first, actually, this morning. Brad Free, you think of Brad as a handicapper first, and most of us think of Litvin as a handicapper first. But they both, you know, the writing chops are pronounced and are there. And in fact, I was looking through my library this morning at the things that Dave wrote, and you know, his early handicapping book, I don't have real life handicapping, but expert handicapping I do have, and he contributed to the really terrific and underappreciated, you know, it's funny, everybody says, what do you recommend for handicapping books? There are the two Bet with the Best books from the DRF, the original DRF press, the handicapping library, and Bet with the Best and Bet with the Best 2, which focused on long shots, and Dave contributed to those. His chapter in Bet with the Best 2 about finding vulnerable favorites. And Dave, you know, Dave had a column for years as well in the form that Handicapper's Corner, and As I told Dave Groening the other day, my first exposure to Litvin came through the pages of MetroTurf with the Closer Looks, which, of course, then eventually were incorporated into the form. I mean, there's a lot of things. The last three buyers, and you know, there were a whole bunch of things. MetroTurf was a terrific effort. There were so many things at that time between, of course, the Racing Times, and then ultimately, you know, Steve Crist coming over to the forum. Dave Litvin predated Steve Crist's acquisition of the forum. But Dave Litvin was the first handicapper. I mean, even more so than Beyer and Davidovits and Crist and, you know, so many others. Dave Litvin was the guy that I looked to, you know, because obviously, he's, you know, he was the lead, you know, 25 years as the lead handicapper in New York. And so, you know, the written analysis, you know, the top three, typically the top three choices, and, you know, a blurby discussion of the race. And I always, when I got to meet Dave years later, it's actually not much later than I'm thinking about it now. I mean, I got to meet Dave and get to know him in the mid aughts, right? So 2004, 2005, 2006 in that range. And I, you know, started seriously about, you know, late '80s. I told him flat out. I mean, when I saw that he liked a horse that I liked, it gave me a lot of confidence. And there were certain things, and I always cite Andy Serling as having taught me about the nuance of 7/8, 7 furlong races. But Litvin too. Litvin, I would notice that when I would handicap a 7, I don't know why this stands out in my head. Maybe because 7 furlongs was a distance that when I first started playing, I didn't understand about whether, you know, route types or sprint types. But if there was a 7 furlong race and I landed on the same horse that Litvin liked, I was all in. That part I distinctly can remember. When I would read Dave, this is very unfair. I mean, 60 something, my age, same as my age, I guess, and leaves a still a youngish family, daughters and Sam, daughters, Addie and Marnie, and Sam's newly betrothed wife and daughter-in-law Maggie. Sam must have been 16 when he, I think, what's the New York, what's the age that you can hire kids? I had to let Barry, my partner Barry Fry, know this morning, because I know Barry's going to want to get a hold of Robin. Sam worked for us for I don't know, 5 years, 6 years. I mean, all through high school, you know, late high school and into, you know, his probably to almost 20, maybe, or past 20. And he started out the old fashioned way at the old barbecue, which was hauling sausage around. with the cooler with the boiled sausage that would then get hustled to the stands to be grilled. And he worked hard. He never worked in the tent with me and behind the carousel. He worked with Barry on the over at Sausage Land, the Sausage Arms, as we would call it with Paulie. So the Litvins would, you know, they'd be at the track, Robin and Dave, and they'd come by and check on him. So I yeah, we do all. I think everybody knew this was, you know, this was coming and coming too soon, and there's been an outpouring, just a huge outpouring of from all different quarters. Those that worked with him, press boxes, or later, he did some chart calling down in Florida for Equibase, and we're gonna hear for we'll hear for some, we'll get I'm sure a hatful of tributes, starting with KJ. And I, you know, I haven't even I'm gonna call Brad Free here momentarily, and you know, Brad obviously being on the West Coast, so not as, you know, didn't have as many opportunities probably, you know, when there were some gatherings. You remember, you know, those of you that ever went to Vegas for the handicapping expo, right? Probably, you know, those kinds of occasions. But certainly, I mean, Brad Free and Dave Litvin were, you know, you see those big freight trains with two engines, with two locomotives, and then fold in Marty McGee as well for Kentucky. But, you know, Brad and Dave, West Coast and East Coast, New York, you know, New York and California, just highly respected opinions. I mean, Dave really understood how to look at a race. And you know, it's funny that this week we had that conversation, that was generated by our friend John that wrote in from Portland, and you know, talked about, you know, I brought up that topic, in fact, with Grenick, about mid-priced long shots, and Litvin's approach, when I came across him and started to follow his approach, it seemed, I hadn't thought about this either, his approach and the horses that he was picking a lot of times. He, you know, he certainly was somebody, not that he was afraid to bet against favorites, because he wasn't, but he also was somebody that, you know, that knew that if a favored horse absolutely deserved to be favored and was a likely winner, he'd pick him. He didn't have to do backflips to try to beat, you know, a favorite that was well worthy of favoritism and likely as a winner. But it when I first was looking and reading analysis and those closer looks, particularly in MetroTurf, you know, because even in the closer looks, two lines, you know, what, 35 words, 30 words, you could tell what the lean was, even if it wasn't a full-fledged analysis. You know, prefer others more. The pick, the one to beat, the one to catch. You know, there's certain little phraseology, but it sure felt to me when Dave, as Dave became my favorite, you know, kind of the North Star about you know, looking at an opinion, it sure felt like he was keying off those kinds of horses, 6-1, 8-1. 10-1. I mean, and my game is predicated on that, and so I have just a world of respect for Dave Litvin's career and approach to the game, and all the people that undoubtedly he helped and helped them to understand the game better. Very tough. We'll get to Brad Free here momentarily. The first order of business today, going into the weekend, and then there's good racing that we're going to look forward to. The first order of business, though, is the mayhem in Ozone Park yesterday. right? Oh my God, that was crazy. And it leaves us the aftermath, the aftermath of $71 winner Ida, Eddie Barker, longest shot on the board, and I'm sure Eddie did all he could to to lower that price. But I haven't. I should have reached out to Eddie. I'm sure he was absolutely tickled. I guarantee you, he had something. Eddie likes to bet. Then there was playing with matches and the nightcap. I mean, things were decided early. It didn't take $37 Mark Henning winner playing with matches to decide this sequence. It was very tough to pass yesterday. Yeah, you had to be forward. We are on the turf. The two turf races. What is the sixth and the eighth? There's that marathon. Sixth and the eighth are good for turf. Everything yesterday we were off, and it didn't really impact thing. You also had the $90 winner. It was crazy. Alarm clock. Norm Follett for owner Alex Kasdan. How about that? The Not This Time Philly with Herman Harkey. So here's what we got. We got a pick five carryover of 172,000. So that'll get, gosh, that'll get at least five times or more. So figure that's going to bring in a million. And you got a $25,000 pick six carryover. Now I'll tell you, I'm halfway through writing things up. Derby Trail is down, by the way. The server migration, or who the hell knows? There's something they had to do something. They said it's going to take 4 to 6 hours for the server migration. And so I woke up this morning at 4 o'clock to start writing things up, and I was sidrate and flublunged, as we say. So I'm writing it up at the At the Races website, so it'll be there. I don't know if Derby Trail will be up. First leg of the pick six goes off at 1:46, and the pick five starts at 2:16. All right, so I will have this. You'll be able to get the look by about 12:30. I'm forgetting something here. I just was about to say something, and All right, let me reach for Brad anyway, and give you the rundown. Brad Free, Karen Johnson to pay tribute to Dave Litvin. Scott Shapiro will be through. We'll get Scott in here, and Marcus Hirsch in hour two, and we'll get the opening news from Fairgrounds. Get the first few missives, and I see that Chalky's the picks. Chalk's Choices. Chalky is back. If for those of you that want to follow the champ, Mike Bacik, the whole Hurricane crew is they're all excited, you can tell. John Hurd and all the all the maniacs. They're all ready to go. Scully in hour two. Nick Tamaro. So not only will we get some of Nick's opinions for tomorrow, Nick and I will run through this pick five and pick six. I gotta tell you, this is not for the faint of heart and not for the shallow of pocket. I'll tell you that too. Papo can't come today. He's got an outside appointment, so we'll only be able to do some form to win snapshots. I'll see if Papo can't get a couple of the tougher races, maybe. Maybe that sixth. The sixth race, there's 10 horses going 1.38 miles. Everybody loves that. There's seven horses that I mean, that thing is, forget it. That thing is murder. Just murder. I mean, there's 15-to-1 shots. My Lips Are Sealed and Rombique that are seemingly as good as anything else. It's very tough. Very tough race. All right. So we'll see if we can't get a couple of spots. Chuck Simon making me laugh like he is wont to do. Thank you, Charles. let me get to Brad, all right? Because otherwise we're going to get in trouble here. It doesn't take much for me, as you could tell from yesterday. Hope every sure seems like everybody enjoyed yesterday, and that hour with, I'd never expected to spend that hour with Neil. It was just absolute pleasure yesterday. There we go. And there's our guy. Brad Free is joining us. And Brad, I'm a week late, I guess, and maybe a few dollars short. Good morning.
Good morning. And I'm so glad, Steve, that you began this morning's show talking about Dave Litvin, a handicapper that I had such great respect for. We were kind of bi-coastal colleagues for a number of years at Daily Racing Form. And Litvin, he was one of these guys who, he did the work. He did the research. He understood how to watch a race. He also understood how humbling that this game can be. And his twice weekly columns in Daily Racing Form for a number of years, the Handicapper's Corner series that he penned, was must reading for myself. I absolutely loved reading Dave Litvin's stuff. And, you know, public handicappers are often accused of, well, all he ever does is pick chalk. That was not the case with Dave Litvin. And just one of his books I have on my bookshelf, along with, you know, books by Beyer, Brohammer, Quinn, and Kramer, Dave Litvin's expert handicapping, and I'm just thumbing through it. He wrote a column in October 1993, and the headline of the column was "Zito May Be Hiding Another Derby Winner." That was written 6 months before Gopher Gin won the 1994 Kentucky Derby. So Litvin, you know, he could see the writing on the wall with regards to Gopher Gin months before any of us had any idea who Gopher Gin was. And I'm just glad to be able to, you know, pay a little minor tribute to Dave Litvin, who was, in my opinion, and clearly many others, a fantastic handicapper. He was kind of a, I didn't know him that well, but he seemed sure, kind of quiet, but he had a sharp wit about him that was absolutely refreshing. Very sad to hear about Dave's passing, but a guy who I will fondly remember for a long, long time.
No, I appreciate it, Brad, and I didn't even have to ask you if you wanted to share some thoughts about Dave. But I knew that just the fact that you were, like I said, like a pair of locomotives on you know, the freight train that, that carries everybody in the game forward, the Daily Racing Form. So,
it's funny. Dave and I, we had a great idea, Dave and I did, a number of years ago, where we would swap roles for a summer. And I would spend the summer handicapping at Saratoga. And Litvin would come out to Del Mar and spend the summer handicapping at Del Mar. And we thought it was one of the most creative, wonderful ideas that, you know, either one of us had ever come up with. Of course, like many good ideas, our supervisors put the kibosh to it, and it never did happen. But Litvin would have loved to have come out here and taken a swing at Del Mar for the summer, and likewise me with Saratoga. We probably both would have, you know, gotten killed, but it would have been kind of cool for a West Coast guy to go east and East Coast guy to go west. I'm sad that never did transpire. But again, like I said, Dave was just a great guy, and I'm sad about his passing. I will always have a fond spot in my heart for him.
Nicely stated. I appreciate it, Brad. As I mentioned, Karen Johnson is going to follow, who also, colleague. Not sure if Karen was already at NYRA in the publicity department when Dave signed on, or if they may have been colleagues at both NYRA and at the Form when Karen, because Karen was there in the 90s, right?
Sure, I believe so. Yeah, for sure. One of the things that I miss, just going back to the Handicapper's Corner columns that Litvin wrote, you know, that's something that we just don't see very much anymore, as the, you know, print product has shrunk, not only at Daily Racing Form, but, you know, publications everywhere. There just doesn't seem to be room for that anymore. I that's one of the things that I miss about in this day and age of, you know, tweets and short little, you know, snippets here and there. Those weekly Handicapper's Corner columns that Litvin was able to craft twice a week, and that is no easy task on top of handicapping, you know, 5 day a week, 6 day a week racing. They were refreshing, they were well researched, and you always came away from those columns feeling like you learned something. So I wish we did more of that. But in the meantime, I still have many of those columns saved in my files.
Interesting. And you emulate, you know, you've got your, you know, your that notebook of yours. I mean, that is not just horses to watch and you know, kind of a trips and traps notebook, but it, you know, you also hint about, you know, certain things with track bias and you know, you've got a long, you've been doing that forever.
Well, yeah, and you know, we began a notes column a few earlier this year that kind of got put on hiatus leading into the Breeders' Cup, and with the staff downsizing, it's something that I haven't had a chance to you know, come back with. Hopefully we can, you know, reinstitute that feature this winter. That's undecided right now, but yeah, that's one of the things that I enjoy doing, and you know, Litvin was a part of that.
Brad Free with us, and last week, of course, I had to abandon ship for a family, you know, sad occasion, and didn't get a chance to preview the Bing Crosby season at Del Mar, and things underway. Resume, of course, today. Brad, how about an overview, and then maybe we'll pick out a few spots. You know, certainly in the shadow of Breeders' Cup, it does feel like the fall meets kind of, you know, fairgrounds opens today. It does feel not anticlimactic, but it you get the sense that, you know, there's some of that post-Breeders' Cup fatigue.
Yeah, in a way, you're right. On the other hand, this fall meet is so different from the summer meet at Del Mar, and it's different in a very refreshing way. Summer at Del Mar is chaotic, and you know, there's a lot of alcohol that's consumed, and a lot of people are out there partying. Everybody wants to see and be seen, and it's nuts during summer at Del Mar. It's a completely different vibe during the autumn meet at Del Mar, and I love it. It's relatively quiet. We began the meet last weekend in relatively quiet fashion with three successive restricted stakes races. A couple were restricted by no stakes winners, recent stakes winners, another one for Calbreds. But the meet kind of it kind of picks up steam, and it picks up steam this weekend with a pair of stakes races for two-year-olds, the Desi Arnaz tomorrow and the Bob Hope Stakes on Sunday. And then the final 2 weeks of the meet, the Autumn Turf Festival, is spread out this year over two weeks. A lot of times Del Mar would bunch all the Autumn Turf Stakes into a one-week period. This year, and I like the idea, they're spreading it out. And we have the Red Carpet Stakes Turf Marathon for Fillies and Mares on Thanksgiving, followed by the Grade 2 Hollywood Turf Cup, the Grade 2 Seabiscuit, a Dirt Stake next Sunday, the Native Diver, and then on closing weekend, five stakes races, four of them graded, including the Grade 1 Hollywood Derby and the Grade 1 Matriarch Stake. So it's a meet. It's a short meet. It's a four-week meet, three-day-a-week racing plus Thanksgiving, and it kind of builds to a crescendo on closing weekend with a pair of Grade 1. So it's a really fun meet. You know, they have 4,000 to 5,000 to 6,000 people on track each day. The weather is fantastic. It's, you know, 70 degrees and crystal clear blue skies, and everybody just seems to be kind of relaxed and having a good time. So I spent last weekend down there. I'm heading down there again this morning and looking forward to spending another weekend at Del Mar. But it's a really cool, fun meet leading into the Los Alamitos meet in December, and then of course the long stand at Santa Anita. So really, Del Mar has done a fantastic job filling the void left by Hollywood Park's closure. And this 4-week meet at Del Mar, which is turf-centric, has really filled in a need on the Southern California circuit.
Well, and I have not looked. I don't know if the nominations have closed for those traditional meet-enders at the end of the month. They probably have, actually. It's already the 18th, my God. So they probably have. Yes or no?
No, not yet.
Not yet? Okay.
Noms will be released today four stakes races that will be run next week. Those include the Red Carpet, the Hollywood Turf Cup, and the Seabiscuit. And then next week, the noms will close for those five turf stakes at the end of the meet, including the Derby and the Matriarch. We do have a little bit, a semi-good idea of some of the horses that will be running in some of the big stakes races. The Hollywood Derby, Cabo Spirit is expected to run. He won the Twilight Derby. Celestial City for Shug McGahey is expected to come out. Speaking Scout, who finished second behind Cabo Spirit, will run. A maiden by the name of Spycatcher, who had a very good prep race on opening day, he'll be back in the Hollywood Derby. Then the Matriarch, that's going to be the career finale for Regal Glory, the multiple Grade One winner by Chad Brown. Dulce Zell, a 3-year-old filly trained by Brown, is going to come out and take on older fillies and mares. Princess Grace, a cowbred by the name of Eddie's New Dream, is expected to throw her hat into the ring. So it's not, those Grade Ones at the end of the meet, they're not star-laden, but they are usually very good, solid races in their own regard. And I'm looking forward in particular to watching Beyond Brilliant, trained by John Sheriff. I think he split the field in the Breeders' Cup Mile. He'll be running in either the Seabiscuit or the Hollywood Turf Cup next week. I think he's on the verge of becoming a very important grass horse in California, and goodness knows we need it out here. So Beyond Brilliant is expected to run this fall as well. And he's going to be a key member of the grass division out in California this winter.
I'm glad you did this because given the situation that they're facing at Churchill with the difficulties of that turf course, Fairgrounds is not going to be able to start the season with turf. So I wondered if, there were going to be a few extra bodies that might find their way on the FedEx plane out for those spots.
Yeah, there are for stakes races and also for maiden races as well.
Big purse. Trainer
Wesley Ward sent a couple of maidens out here, including Playlist, who runs today in race number 5. And he also has a 2-year-old male, Poulter Gelding, who runs on Saturday in a grass sprint race. That horse's name is Taste for the King. Both Playlist and Taste for the King disappointed first time out, but Playlist had a huge alibi, which I wrote about in today's edition of Daily Racing Form. Wesley Ward explained exactly what happened to her, which she was odds on and off the board in her debut. And Taste for the King, who runs Saturday in race number 5, a 2-year-old male, he ran at Kentucky Downs, and he was on a turf course that he just did not like at all. It was wet, and he could not handle it. So Wesley Ward sending out a couple of 2-year-olds out here for maiden races, and that's something you don't often see. Maiden races shipping from one circuit to another, or maiden horses shipping from one circuit to another, looking for grass. Churchill Downs has a problem on their hands with their turf course and Fairgrounds. New York is about wrapped up for grass racing, or will be soon.
Yep.
So California is the place to be for grass racing, at least through the November, early December meet at Del Mar.
Let's touch on a couple of things. And, you mentioned among other stakes this weekend, I'm going to actually do something rare and start with Sunday. And I know that you don't have picks in yet, but 2-year-olds going 7/8. And to some degree, I would think that this could be a stepping stone to the futurity.
It could be. The picks are in, Steve.
Oh, good.
We get up early out here in California. You know that. The Bob Hope Stakes is the Grade 3 Bob Hope, 7 furlongs on Sunday. It's race number 8. As usual, Bob Baffert is well represented in this race. The horse to catch is his front runner, Having a Meltdown, who won the Best Pal Stakes this summer at Del Mar, finished 2nd to Cave Rock in the Del Mar Futurity, and he has not started since then. he's a pure sprinter. Baffert thought about sending him back to Keeneland for a $200,000 stake race, the Bowman Mill, but he spiked the temperature, having a meltdown did, so shipping plans were off, and Baffert kind of, you know, regrouped and pointed him for the Bob Hope. I don't know that having a meltdown would be a futurity candidate. And same really kind of applies to Newgate. Newgate won his career debut kind of impressively, and then he was unplaced in the Del Mar Futurity and then unplaced again in the Breeders' Futurity. Baffert's taking blinkers off, shortening it up to one turn. They're going to try a different strategy on Sunday with Newgate. They've been sending him and putting him into the race. They're going to let him drop out, get settled on his own, and come with the run. He drew perfectly for that style. Blinkers are off. Newgate on Sunday in the Bob Hope. And so from the outside post, Johnny Velasquez has lots of options. So this is a race that Baffert has won 11 times, 5 times at Del Mar, 6 times at Hollywood Park. It does often lead to the Los Alamitos Futurity next month. With those two principles, having a meltdown and Newgate, both probably one-turn specialists, I kind of doubt that they would be in the Futurity. Not going to say that they won't be. But Baffert's main Futurity starter could be working on Sunday morning or Saturday morning, and that's Arabian Lion, who scored an impressive career debut, and then he went back to Keeneland and finished second in an allowance race. Baffert is considering Arabian Lion for the Los Alamitos Futurity in late December, and we'll see, you know, how that workout goes this weekend and moving forward. But the Bob Hope, yeah, it often does produce starters for the Futurity. The Futurity this year might not be that great of a race, but Arabian Lion, if I had to make a pick today, he would be the leading candidate.
We'll talk about the fillies in a second. Since you brought up Arabian Lion, let me ask you what you're hearing from the camp, whether from Baffert or Gary Young, about Arabian Knight, who was as impressive as the Filly and Mare Sprint winner an hour later on Breeders' Cup Saturday.
Arabian Knight was absolutely dazzling. A $2.3 million Uncle Mo Colt, who earned a 97 buyer speed figure. And Baffert I talked to Baffert yesterday, and he, at this point in time, Arabian Knight's status is undetermined. So he's, you know, Baffert's got a lot of two-year-olds turning three with a lot of different options, but there's nothing pending right now for Arabian Knight. He went back there to Keeneland. He got the job done. Plans are in flux for him. So that's to be determined. He came out of the race fine from all reports, and we'll see what transpires with Arabian Knight. I don't think he would run again this year, but I shouldn't say that with any conviction. He's in good shape. He's a fast horse. He was well regarded from the time they purchased him, and we're going to hear a lot more about Arabian Knight. I just don't have a specific plan for this fast colt.
The Philly version of the Bob Hope, the Desi Arnaz, or as we call it, the Babaloo, the return of Justique, who was the unfortunate Philly victim of one of the great monikers around handicapping, Figs Don't Lie.
that's true.
Right?
Yeah, and she faces the same challenge on Saturday. I think that this is a better filly than her Figs would suggest, but you have to wonder. I mean, really, her as impressive as her career debut was, she was slow early, she sliced through traffic, she rallied to the lead, and she won under a hold going away. It earned a 72 buyer speed figure. So that wasn't exactly the type of figure that you would, you know, impress too many people. She got sick after that July 31st maiden victory, was unable to make the debutante. And even in hindsight, trainer John Sheriffs recognizes that the grade two chandelier, two turns in early October, coming off a layoff, recovering from illness, was really a whole lot to ask. She was an unbelievably short price at 6-5. And under the circumstances, I thought her third place finish in that two-turn race was actually not bad at all. Her figure regressed again to a 66. So this is I think she's a good filly, but her two races, 72 and 66, would suggest otherwise. She had an unbelievably fast workout last weekend at Del Mar, 58 flat, a bullet workout. Now, the track at Del Mar is playing fast, and everybody loves it, by the way. They changed the surface this last summer. The track sped up. It has continued through fall. It's a fair track. It's a safe track, and Justique loves it. She broke off behind a stablemate, Monique, and worked 58 flat under Victor Espinoza. So Justique comes into the Desi Arnaz in top shape, and we're going to find out how good she is. And she better be very good, because she faces a fast filly who, on numbers, there's not even any comparison. And I'm referring to Blessed Touch, who in her second career start won by more than 8 lengths with a 90 buyer. That's the highest number this year in California by a 2-year-old filly, and the fourth highest by a 2-year-old filly anywhere in the country. So Blessed Touch, with her speed, her top figures, I won't be surprised if she actually goes off as the favorite. John White has her listed as the 9-5 second choice, and Justique 8-5. They're going to be close on numbers. They're not close at all. Blessed Touch is fast. Trained by Tim Yachtin. She's a daughter of Gervin. And, you know, she's probably going to set the pace. It's interesting, you know, some of these figures, as impressive as Justique was first time out with that 72 buyer speed figure, there was another Gervin filly last weekend whose debut was spectacular. Her name is Faiza, F-A-I-Z-A. She went 6 furlongs in 109.28, galloped out like a beast, and yet her number came back on the slow side as well, on the low side, 74 buyer, which I thought was probably lower than I expected. Much lower than I expected. But watch out for Faiza. Sometimes, you know, figures are one thing, and you're right, they don't lie most of the time, but not all the time. Sometimes you have to use your own eyes. I know what I saw with Justique last summer. I know what I saw last weekend with Faiza. A couple of very good fillies whose figures would suggest that they're really not much. I think both of them could be very, very special. We're going to see Faiza, hopefully, in the Grade 1 Starlet next month at Los Al.
Excellent. The other stake on Saturday, the Cary Grant, or the Judy, and down to 5 with Surfing Star coming out. The Chosen Vron for Cruel Jack is going to be an overwhelming favorite. So maybe let's find something else as an interesting play, either today or tomorrow. You know, you mentioned that playlist at 8-5, and I know that you made playlist. Today's best, there is an interesting horse. Adam Kitchingman sends out that cheapish Taprit filly that was just a $15,000 purchase, but she's working sharply at St. Louis Ray. And anybody's choice, the 6 at a price, I thought might be a little interesting.
Well, she's listed at 12-1, Adam Kitchingman, great daughter of Taprit. I think the playlist, Wesley Ward thinks that she's very, very good on grass. Her dirt workouts are very ordinary playlist, but she worked on grass a couple times this summer at Saratoga, and she was dazzling in those workouts. She did not run to expectations in the afternoon for reasons that you can read about in today's edition of Daily Racing Form. but I think she's very good. I think the main rival for playlist today in race 5 is a second time starter by the name of Pleasant Wave, trained by George Papa Padromo. And she ran very well first time out. She finished 4th by 2 lengths. She raced a little green, kind of seemed uncertain what she was doing through the stretch. She got beat 2.5 lengths. That race has already produced a pair of next out winners. So I would expect Pleasant Wave, who has trained fast since that race, to give playlist a run for her money this afternoon. As far as a price horse goes, there's a long shot I'm going to gamble on this afternoon. It's in the last race today, Steve. It's a second time starter trained by John Sheriffs. His name is Courtside. He didn't run a yard first time out. It was not a good effort. He was 23-1 and he finished 10th by 13 lengths. That was a sprint in summer. It was at the end of the meet. And I suspect that, you know, Sheriffs just wanted to get a race into him. Sheriffs trained second start maidens often improve significantly. And I thought that Courtside has upside in his second start. He's the son of Gormley, owned by CRK Stable. Sheriffs has two horses in this race. The other one is the favorite, the morning line favorite, Pelagio, whose attributes are a lot more conspicuous. He's finished in the money a couple times in routes. He's a proven runner with decent figures. But I think that Courtside, second time out, he should move forward. It's a gamble. It's a risk. I don't know for sure how much horse this is, but I would expect Courtside at 8-1 to take a huge forward move in the last race today at Del Mar, race number 8.
Brad Free, everybody. Brad Free, one on your Twitter and, of course, in the pages of America's Turf Authority since 1894, the daily racing form. Brad, I appreciate this. All caught up on Del Mar, and happy Thanksgiving, and we'll catch up for the big grade ones at the end of the month.
Yeah, thanks for the chat, Steve. I'll talk to you soon.
Brad Free, everybody, and just so good. So good. Sharp. One of my favorite Brad Free anecdotes involves Steve Haskin. And Steve was coming on, probably had to have been a Thursday, 10:30. So Haskin's coming on, and it just so happened I had put Brad Free in. There must have been a carryover. Either at Santa Anita or Del Mar. It was a big pick six carryover. Hollywood even. It could go back that far. And I just remember, and Brad went through everything, and this, we want this one, you want that one, and this could be a single. And at the end, he finishes up, and then Haskin comes on. He goes, he says, you listen to Brad Free? He says, I've never put a pick six ticket in my life, but I now want to. He says, you listen to Brad, and you're like, you got like blood dripping from your fangs. You're so ready to bet because he's so succinct and so focused, and it's just a pleasure. And I really, as we reach for Karen Johnson, I really appreciate that Brad just launched immediately into an appreciation of Dave Litvin. And Karen Johnson joins us, and in a lot of ways, Karen's turf writing and turf publicist career paralleled and overlapped Dave Litvin's. Karen, for everybody around the game, horse players and fans of all types, so sorry about Dave Litvin's passing. Brad Free just talked about him, and I know that you shared workspace with him for a long time.
Yes, thanks for having me, Steve, to be able to talk about Dave. A very important person in my life and someone I met quite early on in my career. When I was just out of college in 1985, I took a job at NYRA in the press box, and Dave was already there. He was a statistician, and we just immediately clicked. And, he's such, talking to him in the present, all right, a kind man who was funny, who I really respected his work ethic. That was one thing about Dave. You could have your fun in games, but when those entries came out and those PPs were up, he was all about just studying that. And then you don't talk to him for the next few hours. And then he would like pick his head up from the computer and look at you and smile. And you're like, okay, now we can like share a funny moment.
That portion of his career, actually, and the time that he was in the turf publicist arena, I actually kind of predates my awareness. I totally thought of him and think of him first and foremost, as the longtime New York DRF handicap analyst, and you actually, I suggested to Brad Free, Karen, that, when you were writing right in the 90s in the form, that, you guys were colleagues there as well.
Yes, and so that's what was so fun about it was we, you know, continued along on this path. And of course, I became very friendly with his wife, Robin, you know, a wonderful person. They were a wonderful couple. You know, they were to celebrate their 40-year anniversary at the end of this month. And, you know, the one thing about Dave was even when geography separated us, you know, when he would be down in Florida, he always reached out to check on me and always remembered to call me on my birthday, which can't be said for actually some other people. And I visited with him on Tuesday in the hospital here in Saratoga. And, you know, right down to the very end, you know, he's asking me questions about myself and telling me to take care of myself and how important health is. And, you know, it was such a nice time that I spent with him on Tuesday. And I'm so happy that I had the opportunity to be there with him.
It's one of those situations too, that when, you know, when he was stricken originally and then, you know, you hear, you know, he got the all clear and it goes a period of time. And when you check in with him and, or you see him and, you know, how you feeling? Good. Everything's good. You know, you sort of just, you make kind of a blanket assumption that oh, he's moved beyond it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the scary part. Yeah. And, you know, he had those several really good years.
Yep.
And I remember when he came out on the other side several years back and we had this nice get together that was arranged by Naira, somebody that worked in the publicity department at the time, John Durso, I believe, like did a trophy presentation and a whole bunch of us, you know, came into the winner's circle. And Dave was still a little weak at that time, but he quickly got better. And you could just see the appreciation on his face that day with so many people, you know, being around him. And, you know, I know that Dave Grenning had visited him the day before. Yep. I did. And, you know, Dave said to me on Tuesday, Litfin, he said, you know what, I had a good run. And it was just, you know, hard words to hear. But, you know, just I think he was so grateful for the support that he and Robin have had during this really hard time.
Well, from a handicapping standpoint, I think, you know, those of us that are, you know, the player side, you know, that's our particular, that's how we gravitate, to Dave. And, you know, then later I mentioned, you know, Sam worked for us at Carolina Barbecue. And so, you know, you'd see them, you know, you'd see him and Robin would always come by during the day. And you know, once in a while, Dave would come down once in a while from the press box for lunch, you know, either before the race day would start or if he could, you know, if he could slip in, you know, between races. But, you know, so I even got to know him then. It's funny when it comes to the show. I mentioned this with Grenig the other day. I asked Dave a lot of times. He came on, you know, years ago, and I don't know, at a certain point, I particularly Belmont weeks, I would say, Dave, you want to come on and get, and he'd kind of beg off. At a certain point, you know, you kind of stop asking. I was like, well, I guess he doesn't want to come on, but,
you know, I think a lot of that also had to do with what I said earlier. Like, he got really into the zone and focused. And, you know, he was also a quiet guy.
Yeah.
He wasn't one that was going to, you know, engage on Twitter. And,
no.
You know what I mean? A very classy person and quiet. But certainly, like, a lot of fun and a very, very sharp wit. We had some very funny moments together that we, you know, recently recalled. You know, outside of Tuesday's visit, I did see him a month ago up here in Saratoga, Better Times. It was right around the time that Sam was getting married, his son, and we met up and we had coffee at Dunkin' Donuts with Robin, and we were just kind of giggling at this stuff, you know, and I'll always cherish all those memories.
Karen Johnson, I appreciate this. I know it's not easy. You know, I reached out to a few people that just, you know, Joni, just a lot. People don't realize how often when we have these kinds of moments and these discussions, you know, how many people just can't, it just, it's too, you know, it's,
yeah,
it's,
well,
tough.
I needed to do it for Dave. I want people to know about him and how great he was.
I greatly appreciate it. Karen Johnson, everybody, whose own turf writing career on a par with anyone's. Karen, thank you.
Thank you so much, Steve. Have a good day.
I appreciate it. Karen Johnson, everybody. Of course, PG, daughter of PG, and born onto the racetrack. That's sweet. I mean, that I didn't know the advanced story, her advanced story, and you know, going back to the 80s out of school, and Dave as a statistician, that also is new information. So it's funny. I mean, you when you first get exposed to somebody like a Dave Litvin, you know, it's as, you know, for me, I mean, as a horse player, just somebody that literally came out of the grandstand, you know, you think, oh, that they've been there and that's it. That's what they've been doing forever. I can tell you that Dave was so good, and that, you know, to have that kind of a run, 25 years, and you know, some of the support staff at DRF, that, you know, some of the other staff handicappers that aspired to the position. And we're, you know, right now, of course, Mike Beer is handling the lead responsibility. And I mean, before Mike was essentially the co-pilot, the second, I mean, Steve Grabowski, for years and years, I mean, it seemed that at any time, I mean, there, you know, Dave had even before the illness, I mean, there was some hints that Dave might, you know, he might retire, and I mean, but he just stayed at it, and you know, when he got to the forms absolute credit, I think from like insurance basis and so forth, when Dave got sick, I mean, they helped on that front, I believe, because he had been just a couple of people just listening to the show and didn't read and hadn't heard about Dave. So, yeah. Well, this is tough. Scott Shapiro is going to join us next. Got to get to Scott here between 10 and 10:15. Everybody's got a full slate of responsibilities. Marcus Hirsch will join us after, and James Scully. And then Nick Tamaro, Hour 3. Hammer as well in Hour 3. Haven't talked to Hammer in a couple of weeks because of last week's circumstance. So there you go. We'll be keeping an eye out for Andy. As well, for Andy to send the scratches so that we can... I gotta hope that the scratches provide a little bit of help. There's days like this. I mean, this pick five, it's really a must play. You're going to have, you know, potentially a positive expectation with 172,000 in the carryover to start. So we'll see if we can't get any help from the scratch sheet. We'll do some more. I'm really looking forward to Marcus and his fairgrounds news. I have not seen further update regarding the turf situation, how long it's going to take for what they expect, how long it'll take for the turf to be usable, essentially. So I can assume that Marcus has got that kind of info for us. All right, let's take a break. Hour one in the books on this Twin Spires weekend preview at the races ahead of Thanksgiving next week. Our schedule, Monday, Tuesday, dark Wednesday and Thursday. We'll give you best of and maybe one of our fun shows. Are you sick of me reading? Are you sick of me reading Damon Runyon? Maybe we'll give you that. And then back on Friday, because, of course, Thanksgiving weekend, too much good racing to just, you know, for me to sit and eat leftovers. Back after this, Scott Shapiro joins us.
At the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.